From Du Bois to Fraser, State College to White Oak, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, they are known as earmarks, spending on lawmakers' pet projects that is slipped into the state budget. But they cost taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars. Elizabeth Stell from the Commonwealth Foundation is here with details. When disaster strikes, the Rothrock Foundation responds with needed supplies. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Rex Rothrock of the foundation in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And another effort is underway in Congress to restrict the free speech rights of issue advocates. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Elizabeth Stell of the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. State Representative Seth Grove of York County has reintroduced a bill that would enact reforms to Pennsylvania's election laws. An election reform law passed by the General Assembly was vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf, who then said he was open to some of the changes contained within the legislation. A bipartisan consensus has indeed emerged on some reforms, including giving counties the opportunity to begin processing mail-in ballots prior to Election Day. But the sticking point continues to be voter ID. Republicans want tougher ID requirements to prevent election fraud. Democrats claim such measures are a barrier to voting. Wolf has sent mixed messages over what types of enhanced voter ID he would find acceptable. So now lawmakers are attempting to put together legislation that would gain his signature and make some needed reforms. Former Congressman Lou Barletta is now an announced candidate for the 2022 Republican nomination for governor. He took a traditional step for GOP candidates this week by signing a pledge to, quote, oppose and veto any and all efforts to raise taxes, end quote, that's sponsored by the Washington, D.C.-based Americans for Tax Reform. In so doing, Barletta is the first Republican candidate to sign the pledge, which has become a litmus test in Republican primaries. Pennsylvania voters approved two state constitutional amendments limiting the power of the governor to declare emergencies. The amendments limit such declarations to 21 days without legislative approval. Governor Tom Wolf declared a disaster in the aftermath of Hurricane Ida, which decimated parts of southeastern Pennsylvania. For the first time under the law, the legislature this past week voted unanimously to extend the emergency declaration through October 27th, agreeing with the governor that more time was needed to deal with the aftermath of the storm. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. It is one of the least transparent components of the state budget process, earmarks. They are special projects slipped into the spending plan by lawmakers without going through the regular vetting process. The expense to taxpayers is enormous and growing. To learn more, we turn to Elizabeth Stell. She is Director of Policy Analysis at the Commonwealth Foundation. Elizabeth, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Elizabeth, when we talk about earmarks, our audience has heard us talk about that when it comes to the federal government. We also have them at the state level. Explain what earmarks are and how that process works in Harrisburg.
So earmarks are designating a certain amount of money for a particular organization or group of people. And typically that is not allowed in Pennsylvania unless you do it through legislation. In fact, our Constitution actually prohibits lawmakers from directing a certain amount of money to one particular school or charity. But it does happen in Pennsylvania through this earmark process, which is somewhat similar to the federal process, but much less known. And there lies the issue that earmarks are not transparent. There's no accountability. And that should be concerning for any Pennsylvania taxpayer, whether we're talking about $1,000 or, in this case, almost $200 million. There's no way to really answer the question, is this money spent well?
Let's take a look at that overall spending. Because of the American Rescue Plan, Elizabeth, and a lot of the money that has come in from the federal government supposedly to fight the COVID-19 pandemic, are we seeing earmarks up considerably this year?
Yeah, so when you look at what COVID did to our budget, it's a pretty unusual year. You'll see numbers that are much bigger all across the board. And the same thing applies to the earmarks, which go through our fiscal code, which is one of the many budget bills that they pass at the end of our fiscal year. And when you look at that all together, you're talking $5.5 billion, which is a very big number compared to past years. And so you'll see a lot of the COVID money coming from D.C. running through the earmark process. That's a one-year thing. That will probably not come back again. But there's also a lot of state-funded earmarks that are happening as well. So it's sort of two tiers of earmarks that are happening in the 2021-2022 budget.
Looking at the projects that these earmarks fund, I know in some of the policy papers that Commonwealth Foundation has published, you do say that a number of these projects are certainly very worthy. You're not really disputing the worthiness of the projects all the time, so much as you are the process, correct?
Yes, the issue is definitely with the process. Again, there's none of the natural transparency and checks on the spending that you would have if it was a bill or if it was a line item in the bigger budget. You don't have any of the no one that's looking over the shoulder to see, is this a good use of fund? Is this just patronage? Is this just certain politicians rewarding their friends? Or is this actually a good use of taxpayer dollars? So it's the lack of sunlight on this whole process that we're concerned about, not necessarily the programs that these earmarks are funding.
So walk me through this. If I'm a legislator and I have a special project here in my district that I would like to have funded, how do I go about getting that done and how does it get embedded then in that process?
What usually happens is as the budget is being negotiated, there will be lots of people leveraging, right? If you give me this, then I'll give you that. And in Pennsylvania, where we have a different party in the governor's mansion versus legislature, there's going to be that back and forth, that compromise to come to a budget agreement. And so what a lawmaker might do is say, I'm not going to support this budget or I'm not going to go along with this provision unless I get this designation for this charity, this program, whatever it might be. And so an earmark could come out of that negotiation. Now, I can't sit here and tell you which lawmaker is responsible for which earmarks in the budget. We don't know. We don't know what happens behind closed doors, and we don't want to speculate. But there's really no other reason to be funding some of these programs in such an opaque manner if it hasn't been specifically requested by a legislator. So somewhere along the line, there was some request happening. And what we now have is more than $100 million of earmarks that have just built up over time. Since 2016, we've been doing this analysis every year, and we've seen the number of earmarks and the amount of money through these earmarks just gradually ratchet up every year. So they never go back and take out earmarks and say, that wasn't a successful program. It's really just continuing to add in and maintain status quo ones that have already been negotiated in previous fiscal codes.
Isn't that part of the problem, though, Elizabeth, that we don't know which legislator or legislators have pushed a specific project, so there's no accountability for it?
Exactly. So if it was a bill, right, you would have a lot more transparency around it because you could see who's the primary sponsor, who introduced it, who signed on to legislation, who spoke out in favor of it. There's none of that in the earmark process. And so that's our concern, that we're funding things in the wrong way. It's the process that's the problem, not necessarily the programs that are being funded.
We are talking with Elizabeth Stell, who is Director of Policy Analysis at the Commonwealth Foundation. We're talking about the process of earmarks in the state budgeting process. And Elizabeth, talk for a minute or so about how language is involved here. You've mentioned that this isn't exactly the most transparent process. Some of this language makes it even less transparent, does it not?
Yes, because the state cannot directly designate a certain amount of money for a charity or for a school. They use this very convoluted language to get the money to the place they want it to go to. So I'll give you an example. Here's a segment that reads, no less than the amount used in the 2014-15 fiscal year shall be used for blueprint mentoring programs to address reducing youth violence in cities of the first, second, and third class receiving a proportionate share of $50,000. What in the world does that mean? That means, as best as we can tell, there are 58 cities that are getting some portion of $450,000. That's as far as we can go. It's very convoluted. And they, what they do is they'll use, like, they'll even use census numbers, or they'll use Medicare acuity rates for nursing homes to narrow it down to maybe two or three specific businesses that are getting a special allotment of taxpayer money. But in many cases, we can't actually identify, you know, the one entity that's receiving it. We can only narrow it down to a handful of entities. So there's still a lot of questions around who's actually getting this money.
So all of this amounts to a giant workaround against constitutional prohibitions. And as you pointed out, it does sometimes benefit specific businesses or specific individuals. Do we see that this earmarking process is more heavily tilted, Elizabeth, to some departments within the state government and even with some counties in Pennsylvania?
Sure, absolutely. Because most of your spending happens in human services and education, it's no surprise that they get the bulk of the earmarks as well. They have voluminous budgets. They have many, many light items in the regular budget. But then on top of that, they layer dozens of earmarks. And so Department of Education, for instance, has $104 million in earmarks. This year, the Department of Human Services has at least $47 million in earmarks. So a lot of the spending comes from these departments. And in this past year, the Department of Health also had quite a few. And so, again, begs the question, why not distribute this funding through the budget process, or better yet, do it through a competitive contracting bidding? For instance, there's this earmark we pulled out from the Department of Health that talks about funding certain nonprofit organizations for research. That seems like a great candidate for a competitive bidding process versus a very convoluted and secretive earmark process.
The Department of Community and Economic Development, Elizabeth, picks winners and losers when it comes to providing grants or low-interest loans, et cetera, to various businesses around the state. Do we see the earmarking process being used to enable that sort of behavior as well?
Yes. The Department of Community and Economic Development has six earmarks this year worth $20 million. And there's probably a little bit more, but because some of the earmarks don't have actual dollar amounts, we have to just work with the numbers that are in front of us. So we think it's probably more. And we do have a breakdown on our report where we look at each department, how many earmarks and how much spending comes from those earmarks. And you could actually categorize almost all of these earmarks as corporate welfare, right? It's picking winners and losers across the Commonwealth, people that for some reason, because of who they know or who they've known in the past, are getting access to special pots of money. And that's just not the reason that people should be getting tax dollars, right? It should be some sort of competitive process, or it should be a fully vetted legislative process.
Elizabeth Stell is the Director of Policy Analysis at the Commonwealth Foundation. And Elizabeth, tell us a bit about Commonwealth Foundation. Also, very exhaustive, very thorough reports on this and other topics. Where can they go on the web to find those reports?
You can find our earmark analysis at commonwealthfoundation.org. Just search fiscal earmarks and it will come up for you. And you can find all of our research at our website on commonwealthfoundation.org. We're also on Twitter at Liberty4PA, and we're on Facebook as well. So you can read about education, you can read about the budget, you can read about transportation, all of the hot state issues. And I'd also say that Commonwealth of Nation, you know, our goal is really, really about bringing Pennsylvania back. It's about taking these policy ideas and putting them into actual legislation that will result in prosperity across the board, all Pennsylvanians in all parts of the state.
Elizabeth Stell of the Commonwealth Foundation. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Earthquakes, floods, tornadoes, all disasters that require a quick response with a variety of tools needed to help residents recover. The Rothrock Foundation does that and much more. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Rex Rothrock in the Community Benefit Spotlight. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Rex, for being a guest on the program today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Rex, share a little bit of background with the listeners, how there was inspiration to get this organization founded and incorporated, and a little bit of the background of what you do.
Well, kind of for me, started back after Hurricane Katrina. I had responded at that point with just driving supplies back and forth down then and continued doing that for ever since then to any disaster in the area. Back in 2017, after Hurricanes Harvey and Maria hit, I wanted to do more, and I ended up in St. Thomas, Puerto Rico for 6 months volunteering. And it was there, laying in bed one night, I just kind of got this, I knew what I wanted to do when I grow up feeling. Wife and said, I'd like to keep, continue doing this, and would you like to start a foundation or some kind of nonprofit? And she was up for it. So that kind of got the ball rolling back then. And we had decided that, and we've been supporting local charities for, forever. But at that point, we decided we had X amount of money, X amount of time, and we wanted to take that and multiply it. We can easily write a check somewhere, but that's it. So we thought, anytime we ever did anything on these disaster responses we did, we had family and friends that always wanted to participate. So we thought, let's kind of take that to the next level. And from there came up a logo. And if you've seen in our logo, it's a raindrop and a ripple of water. And my wife and I are the raindrop, and the ripple is what we do and how we inspire and motivate other people to get involved.
Sure. There's two aspects to what you're doing. One, you're providing all this relief. And second, you're running a nonprofit organization. And sometimes it may seem like the maintenance and care for the nonprofit organization may be more cumbersome than doing the relief work. How are you making out with running the organization?
We're making out fine with it. Half the organization, like I said, is doing the relief work and just responding to disasters, feeding people. We assemble chainsaw teams to go out and clean up after tornadoes. And that's not all the time. So the other part of our the foundation is we wanted to get involved with helping in the community. So helping other charities to raise money, bringing awareness to other charities. So, yes, it's all time-consuming, but we've managed to get them both together. There's not disasters that need our support year-round, so that does free up time to do other things.
Sure. Take the listeners into what a disaster scene actually looks like. We see it on television. We see the wind blowing and the flooding and the devastation of a tornado and that kind of thing. But you don't get the smell, you don't get the visceral feeling of what a disaster is really like unless you've been in one. Talk a little bit about what that aspect looks like.
It can be tough. You go in and it's obviously it's what you don't see on TV is what you smell. Everywhere you go, you have just standing water. It's a mess, and you really. You start meeting people and you hear their stories. They don't put those on TV, but it's heartbreaking when you hear it, what some people go through during a hurricane, and they're stuck in a closet. And then all of a sudden, everything around them is gone, including the roof to the closet. And they're in there for hours. So those are kind of the things you really can't see on TV that when you go and, you hear the stories afterwards, it's tough, but then it kind of makes you want to do more and, makes you want to help out as much as you can and just feel fortunate that for us in the central PA area, we don't really experience disasters like that too often. So,
sure.
And your lack of resources when you get there, there's lack of water, lack of showers, lack of power. Those are all things that definitely make the whole mission a little bit tough.
Sure. This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Rex Rothrock, the president of the Rothrock Foundation. Rex, how is this region different than other places around the world in the kinds of disasters we face and the kind of devastation that's left behind? What's unique about Pennsylvania?
Hurricanes tend to hit the coastal areas down south. Pennsylvania here, we'll get some tornadoes and some flooding, some localized flooding. So it's not as bad as the other areas. So that end of it, that's why kind of our concentration locally is more in supporting local charities in their day-to-day efforts and helping them raise money.
What are some examples of organizations that you've helped raise money?
Locally in the last year, we've put on golf tournaments, music events, and money for VISTA, Autism Services locally. We've done things for the Pennsylvania Wounded Warriors just recently in July, we were able to put on a nice music fundraiser and raised $11,000 for them. And we ended up acquiring, delivering over 10,000 meals to those that were left jobless from the pandemic. Around the Christmas and Thanksgiving time, we've, you know, we've given out 200 and hundreds of turkey dinners and presents for kids that wouldn't normally get something at Christmas time. And that end of it, that's kind of where our friends and family come in, where we'll challenge them and we'll match donations, food, turkeys, toys, things like that. And what they bring in, we'll double what they do. So that's kind of you know, how we get other people involved.
At the end of the day, how do you know you're making a difference? What gives you the energy to continue?
It's the faces. It's the when you know, we do some local fundraising. When you see a high school kid who's operating a new camera that you just bought him for his club, and just, you know, how excited he gets about it. It's getting cards. It's, like I said, it's smiles. We just see it. We want to, just regular basis, if you're out there taking a tree off of somebody's house, you know, the hug you get afterwards and the tears, you just see it. And it's very motivating. It is what keeps us going.
Somebody listening to the program today would like to volunteer or to contribute. How can they find you?
We can be found on the web at rothrockfoundation.org. Donation can be made there. What we do to keep up is our Facebook page. So anytime we're doing an event, looking for volunteers, selling tickets for a fundraising event, those are always on our Facebook page. So that's kind of what's just the Rothrock Foundation on Facebook. So that's where you can keep up to date with us on a day-to-day basis. So
this is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Rex Rothrock. We wish you good luck, and thank you for being a guest on the program.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk a little bit about our organization, what we do, and anybody wants to get involved, our website or Facebook.
Great. Back to you, Lohman.
Under the guise of election reform, Congress is considering a bill that would dramatically limit the free speech rights of many Americans. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, gives us details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
New threats to freedom at the federal level, both from this Congress and from the Biden administration, emerge on a near daily basis. Yet, there is one that's been defeated but is reemerging in a new form. On June 22nd, the Senate began debate on the For the People Act. This was added to the calendar as a substitute amendment, knowing that Senator Manchin would not be on board with S1, which was unable to receive the votes to be discharged from committee. The legislation's backers pitched For the People Act as protecting voting rights, but it undermines free speech. Nearly a third of it wasn't about voting at all, but instead about restricting and controlling Americans' ability to speak out and shape daily discourse, a cornerstone of American democracy. At Americans for Prosperity, we agree with the ACLU that where free speech rights are concerned, this bill had significant flaws that were detrimental to the health of our democracy. If enacted, the federal government would have become the de facto gatekeeper of public conversation on the most consequential of issues. Politicians and bureaucrats would have had the power to decide which people and which positions would get aired and which wouldn't. Diversity in the public square is an essential ingredient in producing good policy and advancing America's principles. Justice movements throughout our history often started as minority opinions. The freedom of speech empowered people to raise new ideas and overcome many of our country's worst wrongs. Robust debates lead to better solutions to big problems, and America faces plenty of those right now. We called on every senator to oppose S-2093, sending a key vote letter to every senator. What unfolded was a failure on a motion to invoke cloture on a motion to proceed, meaning this legislation was so unpopular that it couldn't even get enough votes to end debate on the bill. So a long conversation has been underway in the halls of Washington since early summer. And the result? The legislation has taken yet another form, being introduced now as 2747. And while the form might be different, the substance is similar. opposition to citizen privacy remains the paramount threat. The new bill, S-2747, called Freedom to Vote Act, includes many of the speech-chilling provisions in the original S-1. This bill is devastating for issue advocacy groups and nonprofits across the political spectrum. The Spotlight Act would require certain nonprofit organizations to report the names and addresses of donors to the IRS. The Disclose Act would require nonprofits to report donors to the FEC for common types of communications and require organizations to declare whether they support or oppose a political candidate, even if the ad was not about the campaign. And the Honest Ads Act creates heavy regulatory and cost burdens for American nonprofits that use the internet to communicate. As People United for Privacy noted, combined, these provisions chill the speech of issue advocacy groups and nonprofits, force nonprofits to choose between spreading their message and protecting their donors' privacy, target law-abiding American nonprofits instead of guarding against foreign interference in elections, unfairly hurt small and emerging nonprofits that don't have the resources to hire attorneys to help navigate these confusing regulations, and force grant-making nonprofits to shut down philanthropic efforts to protect donors and themselves from liability. We know that people's ability to freely think, speak, and join with others contributes to a diverse public square and helps make civic engagement meaningful. At Americans for Prosperity, we will continue to pursue policies and reforms that make it easier for all Americans to engage in civic life. Constitutional rights clear the way for courageous people to drive progress. That progress is urgently needed. To make it happen, we need to make it easier, not harder, for people of all backgrounds and perspectives to stand up and speak out. My name is Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. To learn more, find us on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania, and on Facebook, follow us at @PAAFP.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJSM-FM in Martinsburg, WJUN-AM in Mexico, along with WQZS-FM in Myersdale, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.